Welcome to episode 14 of Speak Beastie for June 19th, 2016.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Claire.
This week, Shannon is off searching for Sasquatch, but we do have a very special guest. Mitchell Thornton from Fantastic Beasts.
Woo.
Yay! So, Mitchell, please tell us about yourself. What's your background with the Potterverse, and like, what's your house?
I've been a big fan for many years since I've been growing up, you know, reading the books and seeing the films over and over and over again, of course. And I started getting into acting and things throughout university, and I was quite lucky to meet a guy who actually been on the set of the last film of Harry Potter, during the scene of when Harry's brought in, killed, so to speak. You think he's dead, but he's not, you know. He was telling me all these amazing stories about it all and everything. I was like, man, this is really cool, you know. So I just went for all the acting stuff. And then eventually, like, out of the blue, they start casting for this Fantastic Beasts film. So, which I had no idea what was it about or anything, really, because I haven't actually read the other work of J.K., so of the Fantastic Beasts franchise. But, I just got involved, and it was just a general casting, and only clicked afterwards what it was, and then I was luckily picked, and it was just general, like, massive experience, really. It was great, so going along to that sort of thing was amazing. So I've got quite a bit of stories to tell about it as well. So yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
But what house are you?
House. Well, not particularly from the actual Harry Potter films. I mean, it's set before the Hogwarts, really. So there wasn't a particular house.
Well, no, you specific, not your character in the films.
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's got to be Gryffindor. Of course it is, you know.
Ah. Yeah, Gryffindor.
We got two Gryffindors and a Hufflepuff and a Half-Puff on the show today. I can't choose between which two houses I want to be in.
I love Slytherin, all about it and everything, but obviously, you know, you've got to go along with Gryffindor, so.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm a bit of both, to be fair.
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Speak Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. But wait, there's more! Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. We want to thank all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Our next goal is to get merchandise. Check out Patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
Okay, before we talk a little bit more with Mitchell about his experience working on the Fantastic Beasts film, we're going to give you the little bit of news that has come our way about Fantastic Beasts. And a little bit of news that is not related to Fantastic Beasts, but is related to this podcast nonetheless.
Okay, wow. Okay.
So, for the Phoenix Register, we have Newt Scamander in Lego form coming at you soon.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I know Legos are mostly for kids, but it was actually our guest host, Michael Harley, who brought this to our attention, that Lego Dimensions is expanding to include the Harry Potter universe. And it goes on to explain that they're expanding even further with adding a Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them story pack extension. We're not sure when that's going to be added, but be on the lookout for Newt Scamander. A total of 16 new worlds will be coming to the game. the Harry Potter portions of this will allow players to play as Harry Potter and Voldemort and explore such settings as Diagon Alley. There's going to be a battle arena, and the managing director of games developer Tom Stone said, "We've built upon the existing LEGO Dimensions starter pack to expand the gameplay possibilities with entirely new LEGO experiences that can't be found anywhere else. We can now provide players with even more customization and mashup opportunities, and are all compatible with the existing game and packs." Battle arenas also introduce a fun new way for friends and family to join the action together and battle's favorite characters, which is an exciting innovation for LEGO video games. So I think that sounds really interesting, and considering that they're adding a Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them story pack, I wonder, because one would assume naturally with Harry and Voldemort in a battle arena, that's who they're battling. So who do we think Newt might be battling? Would it be a beast?
Dragons.
Yeah.
Just dragons. Well, just two dragons together.
The LEGO Dimensions game, it looks, I've never played it myself, but it looks very much like kind of like Mario Party, where you kind of compete with other people in a series of games and contests and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily, it looks like it's not necessarily one universe per thing. It's like all the universes intersect. So you can be playing a Simpsons character in a, on a Harry Potter field and, you know, Mario Karting it up like in a certain game. So
like the LEGO movie where everything is just
Exactly. Like the LEGO movie.
What a movie.
Harry Potter could be in the next LEGO movie. Yay.
Oh my goodness.
It'd be so good.
That's nice to know. I've only played, like, you know, I play a lot of games, but the only LEGO franchise I played is like the LEGO Batman. And that was fun enough, I suppose. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see all this new Harry Potter stuff as well with the Fantastic Beasts in the LEGO.
Yeah, I might actually get into LEGO Dimensions now.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be the thing to get me into it. So no more Fantastic Beast news, but since we are a part Hamilton podcast, apparently, it is important to address the fact that Hamilton won 11 Tonys, including Best Musical. Whoa. And someone in the doc atones it to the fact that it's probably because we talk about Hamilton so much that it won so many Tonys. So you're welcome, Hamilton.
And it's coming to the UK next year. Yay!
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they
awesome. Talk they about a movie, Hamilton also. So, yeah.
Hamilton Takeover.
It's exploding. That'll
be our next podcast, guys.
Yep.
Mm. What do you mean next podcast? Like I said, this is already half Hamilton.
Speak Hamilton-y.
Cool. Well, after that jam-packed news section, I guess it's time for some outposts. I'm going to give a word of warning. There are some big old words in these comments. You guys are far more articulate than I am. And there's a few words, particularly in the second comment, that I do apologize for any pronunciation issues. So the first comment is Jones, captain of Ramoni. I was really interested in the discussion about weaponized intertextuality. I've never heard about it before, but know that I've been susceptible to it. Like when every new Harry Potter trailer played before a different movie I happened to be seeing, I'd get all excited and tear up because of the music every time. I get that. I didn't even have to see the actual trailer. It was just the first few seconds with the music and the Warner Brothers logo that got me worked up. I don't think we need to worry about it too much of this happening in the new Fantastic Beasts movie, though. Reasons being because J.K. Rowling wrote this screenplay. We know from her books that she doesn't just add stuff in just because. She writes for the story, so I don't think that anything in the movie is going to be there unless it's essential to the story. They use the music in the trailer, yes, but I think for the movie we'll be okay.
Yeah, I think for the trailer it was kind of for the non-book readers, for those who had just seen the movies, who would know, oh, so it's part of the Harry Potter universe, because for the book readers, you know, we're hardcore fans. We're going to recognize Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them because it was in just about every book. Harry had to, you know, have it for, I think he started with needing it in his third year for, no, because that was, Monster Book of Monsters.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
So it
was mentioned a few times in the book.
Yeah, it was in book one because he needed it for his school list. So yeah, we're familiar with it. But for those who haven't read the books, who just know, you know, maybe Hedwig's theme or Lumos Maxima, the throwbacks to the original Harry Potter films, they're going to see that and have that light bulb moment of, oh, this is part of the Harry Potter universe.
I think to be honest, interesting that, books, but,
oh no, that was me.
Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, it is interesting that, Jones, captain of the Romani, like included the Warner Brothers logo. And it's funny that, it's true at the beginning of every Harry Potter movie, when you see the Warner Brothers logo come in, there's that like bit of excitement of, oh, it's starting. And I didn't even think about the logo being a piece of intertextuality between the Harry Potter films, but that's actually very, very true.
Yeah.
I think also back to what you were saying, Ariel, the music is, it was put in, the Hedwig scene was put in that trailer just to hook people. If you're at the cinema, most people talk through the trailers and you're sat there. And I think even to be fair, we're all in our little unit of the Harry Potter community that is obviously on top of, like, knows these things are happening. But I've got friends who love the books, enjoyed the films, but they haven't reread them much in the last couple of years, and they don't tend to visit fan sites. So they are that bit detached and didn't really know it was happening. And then all of a sudden they saw some trailer being posted on Facebook about something, and then they clicked it, and they said it was the tune got them in there. It was like, oh, I know this. And it's that hook. And if you're in the cinema and you hear that hook, you suddenly pay attention.
Yeah. I had so many people actually ask me, did you know there's going to be a movie? And I'm like, are you serious? I'm on a podcast. Like, what? How did you not? Because until the second trailer came out, because the first was just, you know, a bit of a teaser trailer. So when the second really long trailer came out, people were coming up to me like, Ariel, this movie. I'm like, I've known for a really long time.
Yeah, I think this comment is also fair. I think there will be nods. Like we've seen from the trailer, there will be nods to the original series, Dumbledore references, etc. Mm. But I don't think it's just going to be thrown in there for the sake of it. I have faith in JK. I know some people think differently, but I have faith. And I'm staying away from Cursed Child spoilers, but I think we'll be okay. We'll be good.
Yeah.
Cool. So the next comment, and this is the one that I will say, there are some words that I've never seen before. So bear with me. That time Remus Wadiwazid Voldy says, so cool to hear about the Sidehill Gojo because I realise I've heard of it before, but only by a different name. In Southern Antebellum lore, it is known as a Gyasicus. In fact, it is mentioned in a book of Atlanta legends I have as a basis for a clever con. As the story goes, sometime in the late 1800s, word was spread through town that a group of men had caught a Gyasicus and were bringing it all for all to see. The creature was made out to be a mysterious and ferocious beast, and so much excitement was whipped up over the creature that lanterns eagerly awaited its arrival and the chance to purchase tickets for the show. Then a huge covered wagon was rolled into town, surrounded by men shooting pistols and frightening noises coming from within, followed by a crowd of boys and men creating all kinds of hoopla over the event. The wagon was led into a building where the showing would take place, and while the handlers unloaded the beast inside, a man outside began selling tickets. Once all the tickets had been sold, a horn was sounded announcing the audience's entrance into the building. At that moment, however, screams and gunshots were heard from inside, followed by the handlers running out shouting, "It's gotten loose! Everyone run for your lives!" The crowd scattered in a hurry, and by the time the townspeople returned to the streets, the ticket seller and his comrades and their wagon were long gone. All that remained was the worthless tickets left littered in the streets. I can't attest to the truth of this story, as it seems only to exist as oral history outside of this one book. However, there are other references to the same hoax being played out in other parts of the country as well.
So, the only thing that really confuses me about this story is how this creature is supposed to be the Sidehill Gouger, because isn't that they could only go up hills? So I don't know, I'm very confused. I'm gonna have to look up this animal because I don't know.
It's like, if you look up the animal, it is basically the same description of a creature that has legs the on one side that are longer than the other.
Okay.
So it is very similar to the Sidehill Gouger, if not the exact same thing. But that is really cool. I've never heard that story before. And I know that there are a lot of stories of people playing like all of these legends and being like, oh, well, there's a monster, so we've caught it, and they use it to their advantage. But that's a really funny particular story where they just totally con everybody out of their money. Like, everybody come see the creature. Oh, it's got everybody run.
Yeah. And also the comments are saying they can't attest to the truth of the story. That's probably the truest story in terms of being a complete con than actually some legends. Like, that's probably exactly what happened. But yeah, I think it's just one of those creatures that has multiple different names from different locations and different mythical lore.
Yeah.
But that's a fun story. Thanks for sharing that one. And then we have another comment about weaponized intertextuality from Sam Williams. They were talking to a friend who's born and raised a Star Wars nerd, and he said that for him, as someone who doesn't know much about Harry Potter, hearing that song is a connection to the universe. It's like the Star Wars theme, how the new Rogue movie uses it. It's like the Lord of the Rings theme. So for us fans, it's Hedwig's theme, but others don't know it's even called that, and it's not even always used with Hedwig. So to them, it's the Potter theme. So it's exactly as he said. It just ties you in. It's just that pull, and it just people relate to it as a result.
You know. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just yeah.
Oh. Oh yeah. What I was gonna say when I was speaking earlier about them using Hedwig's theme for the Fantastic Beasts trailer, like it didn't even occur to me that some people actually call that like the Potter theme, because to me it's always been Hedwig's theme, because I bought the soundtracks when I was younger, and that was I knew all the names of the songs that were playing for the longest time, and that's, to me, it's always been Hedwig's theme, and it takes me back to the moment to the very first few moments of the first Harry Potter film, and how it could have very easily been called Harry's theme or something, but there's a reason they named it Hedwig's theme, and I think
sounds better as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it started there's off in that first film being Hedwig's theme, but by the end it did become the theme tune to the franchise, and the movie producers made it that. And it's just such a good piece of music. Why not keep using it?
John Williams.
It's just so beautiful.
It's iconic, isn't it? It's just amazing.
Yeah.
John Williams has a knack for taking a piece of music and you can immediately associate it with what movie it's from. Then, you know, this comment talks about Star Wars. Star Wars is another example because.
Yeah.
Just amazing how just like. Three little notes of music and you're there. You're in that movie.
It's the same, for example, with like Jurassic Park, you know, that immediately what the song that's from, where it's from film-wise. So.
And that is this week's Outpost. Don't forget you can get in touch with us and let us know your thoughts on this week's or any previous discussions or any future thoughts for the podcast or for Beasts. And now we are leading into our main discussion to chat with our guest, Mitchell. We have some questions for you that we didn't show you before we started.
All right.
I don't want to give you too much warning. But I guess you gave us a little bit of a teaser at the very beginning about how you were sort of getting into acting and then you found yourself in able to be in Fantastic Beasts. But obviously we know we can't ask you for spoilers, but how did you get involved? What was the first point? Did you have an agent? Did they get in touch with you? Did you know it was Fantastic Beasts at the time? Can you talk us through that sort of initial stage of coming on board?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, it was through an agency, but they weren't naming advertising the film name for obviously legal reasons and things. They just entitled it Boswell, which is to do with the filming companies and things that did it. So everybody had no idea, you know. So we were just invited to attend a casting session to be smartly dressed, bringing along some information about yourself and the background. And it was just a general process. Your photo was taken. You gave a little brief about yourself, if you did acting, all that sort of thing, and, you know, whereabouts you live and what your availability is, all that sort of thing. And luckily, on the line after that session, I was contacted to being successful. So, and then only realised when getting to set and things, and obviously seeing all these sort of things going on, I was like, okay, yeah, okay, this is something to do with Harry Potter, right? So, yeah.
So, what did you have?
Yeah, it was kind of mind blowing.
Did you have a costume fitting before going, or is it all on the day you sort of turned up and were given stuff?
No, yeah, there was a because you had to go get your hair cut, shaped, and they took all your sizes, and the amount of clothes that were there was unreal, you know. But big, massive outdoor areas with so many different sections with different clothing, so so many different types of characters and things, you know, whether it be wizards or waiter, whatever, in that time period. So, yeah, and then they just sort of went through, fitting-wise, what you'd suit on based on your look. And then that your photo was taken, and then it was sent to other people, you know. So, and then you found out eventually what you were fit for within the shooting schedule a couple of weeks later. So, yeah.
Cool. So you got the cast, you got involved, and then your days arrived to go and film. Where were you shooting? Were you at Leavesden, or were you in the Liverpool set?
Yeah, I was in Liverpool. Yeah, at the St. George's Hall. So. Mm. You know, that was local for me because I moved here to Liverpool last year, and finding out a big, you know, film like this was coming to film in Liverpool was amazing in itself, you know, so.
Yeah, I was gutted. I went for a weekend away in Liverpool 2 weeks before they started shooting there. I was like, oh, for God's sake. Loved it. Really lovely city. I think I've said this, I've moaned about this before on the podcast. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never go that far north, and the one time I do, it's just before.
Yeah, yeah.
I remembered you talking about they had taped off certain areas or something, and you were just like, oh, I wonder what's happening. And
yeah, the beautiful building.
A fleeting thought. Yeah.
Yeah, they were so, you know, like strict on that because you couldn't go outside anywhere at all at any time without wearing a poncho, you know, covering you completely. And a picture got taken. In the Liverpool Echo, and they thought like people thought they were like blue wizards or something, but they were just ponchos. So yeah, they really couldn't have people outside because it was a massive thing, obviously. So, you know, wearing costumes outside, it was good though.
Well, what time of year was it? Was it hot with the ponchos, or were you?
No, I mean it was kind of normal sort of weather, but it did rain in between, as it does in the UK. That's how it is, but. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really hot weather, so we weren't suffering or anything in these costumes. So
that's good, at least.
Yeah.
So you talked about the strict nature of how you can go outside. What was security like for you guys? Were you having your phones confiscated, or were you?
Yeah. It wasn't more of a confiscation. If you were caught with a phone, you were fired from the agency, and you were like a case was brought in with well, obviously Warner Brothers or whatever. So. And this actually happened with people as well. They went round with phone scanners and stuff during lunchtimes, scanning, you know, just generally the room, finding phone signals and stuff. And we were sat in there having our lunch, people I made friends with, and a security man came in and says, the big guys are coming in to do this with the scanner. If you have a phone, hand it to me now. No, you'll be fine. That's it. Don't worry, nothing will happen. I'll just put it away in the safe depository. But this person didn't do it and got caught, and then I got trouble big time. So
I hate to be that person. Gosh, my sister did a lot of extra work a couple of years ago, but mainly on television, and she was sending me like selfies from set and everything.
That's all we want. Yeah, even in the changing area, she was just taking a picture just in the corridor where you hand in your phone, and this was nowhere near costumes or anything. It was just, you know, behind all the doors and stuff, and she was just there taking a picture or whatever. But because she had a phone in a designated area, you're not supposed to, she got fired as well. So it was terrible. Yeah, it was very strict. I mean, obviously, it's just how the security worked on the project, you know, because it's just keep the secret of what's going on the set, isn't it? So
I was actually an extra in a music video a few years ago.
Yeah.
And
This music video, and where can I find it?
You can't see me in it. You can see my sister, but not me. Otherwise I'd be bragging about it way harder. Not really. But essentially the band was like, yeah, take all the pictures you want, you know, do whatever, but wait until the video's released to release the pictures.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
to me that made sense. I'm like, yeah, of course. And it's a music video. Like, it wasn't super top secret or anything, but for Fantastic Beasts and for it to be part of the Harry Potterverse, and especially since we've known so little about this movie for so long, like, of course they're going to want to keep it so under wraps.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. The two different experiences, three. Considering Claire's sister with the taking selfies.
And there was another thing as well, in one of the scenes, obviously props, people like to steal props, you know, obviously, memorabilia from the set Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts. But people did this, and one person stupidly put it on eBay for sale.
Oh my
so
gosh.
He was obviously immediately caught and dealt with.
Why do that? Why not wait until after the films are out and the distance is like, that is insane. With the sort of security measures, did it change the atmosphere, or was it still quite a fun atmosphere on set, or is it just very professional?
Oh, yeah, it was completely fun. It was great. Yeah, there was a lot of laughter. I mean, the director being there and everything and giving out his, you know, what he wanted and everything. It was all fun. Yeah, it was great. Like, everyone was doing their job as best as possible, really. So, yeah, there was nothing to be scared about, really. So, as long as you obeyed the phone rule. So, yeah.
So how long were you shooting for? Just a day or two?
No, it was a full week in Liverpool. And then they actually invited a lot of people they liked from Liverpool to come along and actually film in the studios near London. So, yeah, well, you know, and where Eddie Redmayne went for and everything, just all the sets. I'm trying to remember the exact location.
Leavesden Studios?
Yeah, that's what we were done. Yeah, Leavesden, yeah. So, yeah, I should remember that, but yeah. Where it was.
So obviously you said earlier no spoilers, but were there any principals around when you were filming, or was it all extras and sort of padding type scenes?
No, yeah, there were quite a few main characters, and John Voight was there as well. So yeah, that was cool. So he actually came in on the first day in Liverpool and just said, "Hello everyone, nice to see you, you know, thank you for being here, looking forward to getting started," all that stuff. He was great. Yeah, he's a really nice man. And yeah, it was very, you know, because to see on hand as well from all the monitors around the filming area, to see him acting just live as well was amazing.
Wow.
So, That was cool. Yeah. but he was so cool, you know, and he actually came on a night out with other people from, like, the, you know, assistant directors and stuff like that. They ended up in this nightclub, so that was quite funny. And that ended up in the paper as well, so that was funny. So,
that's great.
Yeah. It was.
So you said, like, so obviously you guys were going out quite a lot. Did you say everyone on the set sort of got on quite well, all the extras sort of bonded?
Yeah. I mean, in Liverpool alone, there was a good 300-350 of us. So, yeah, there was a lot of people, really, so... Yeah, and it kept growing as well, because people came from all over the UK to do it, of course, as well. So, yeah, it was massive. But, yeah, you met so many different people, different backgrounds, different, you know, skills and things like that. So, and they were all doing different things. So, it was awesome.
So, I have a very important question, because it's a sign of a good production. How were the craft services on set? What was the food available? How did that go down? Was it good? Would you approve?
That it was actually very impressive on that, really. I mean, it was difficult on the toilet facilities, to be honest, because they're outside. So, you know, everyone was inside in St. George's Hall, you know, crew and all that, using, you know, the proper facilities. We had to go outside and use the bloody awful ones. So, but the food was great. We were able to just, you know, get a nice main and then a dessert and things like that. And there was, you know, teas and coffees and, you know, snacks and things like that when you were off on the set waiting to go on, sort of thing. So, yeah, we were well fed, really, looked after. So that was ideal.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love food. So I'm like, I wish you had gone more into detail. Yeah. Like, what kind of dessert?
Oh, no, all the cakes you could eat, really. There were loads of them. Yeah, there was all sorts of cakes going on. So you're quite frightened to put on weight, really, because you're there every day eating all the same massive cakes. So, but no, yeah, it was cool. Yeah.
The space of a week is absolutely fine.
It's like a vacation. It's okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
Vacation.
But no, they were really, really long days, because call times are like 4:30 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning, depending on if you're driving there or not. You know, you get supplemented for it with overtime, early call time, things like that with your fees, you know. But you'd end up being there 8, 9 o'clock probably at night or something, and then you're there again same time next morning or something. So it was very, very long days, very long days.
Wow. Well, at least you were well fed.
Did you have any particular highlights that you haven't already covered? Although the meeting some of the actors is pretty cool. But was any particular
just speaking to them was great, obviously, you know, and just obviously finding out bits of what was going on in the story, because, you know, being there that long, you sort of pick up on things and find out sort of things. What I think the scene we're doing was one of the biggest scenes in the film, so it may have been the turning point in the film, or, you know, it was very interesting to find out these things, so, and a bit of background as well, so, you know, with in terms of where the characters have come from and where previous characters have come from Harry Potter in the future, so things like that.
Do you think you'll be able to spot yourself in the film?
I think so, yeah. There was a moment in when we were doing it in London, there's a certain section, a scene being filmed, and I was quite close to camera behind some of the actors doing a big reaction to what happened in that moment in the scene, so I'm hoping at that point I'll be seen, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be so good.
I was quite devious, really, because I ended up jumping around and trying to get myself in places where I shouldn't have been. And I did at some point get away with it, because I got a few costume changes and things like that, which was nice. But I don't think people realise I was used as one certain character and then I was used as someone else. So, yeah, all being well, I don't know. I'll be seen as at least one of those three.
The hardcore fans might go bananas. They'll be like, hey, that's that guy. He was doing something else earlier in the movie.
Yeah. Because I was basically like being a doorman, and then it was waiting on and all this sort of stuff. And then it was completely different. But in the progress of the scene from the beginning to the end, I mean, three different people. So depending on if I'm seen or not. So, yeah.
Movie magic.
Yeah, yeah.
So from the snippets you've seen, are you excited for the film and the finished product?
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, a lot of my friends have obviously, I was telling my experience there as well, and that they all love Harry Potter. And it's been obviously, with the trailer that it is, it's everyone's hyped crazily for it. So yeah, I really can't wait to see it, because it's fantastic cast as well. And it looks so different. It's just, you know, with how much it's grown as well, so since the last film. So yeah, it's going to be something amazing to see, isn't it? So,
oh yeah,
we're really excited.
yeah.
We got a whole podcast and everything.
As you were saying before, that you haven't read the Fantastic Beasts book or the little textbook, but do you have a favorite beast or mythical creature from any fantasy fiction or myths and legends?
That's hard to say, really. I mean, it's hard to just depict, really, which one would be the favourite and all that sort of thing. I mean, Aragog's amazing, of course, but things like that. So, we've seen that. I mean, there was actually going to, you know, see the tour and everything. They've got a massive spider like that, and it's just insane. So, you know, it's just cool to see things like that.
I hate that spider at the tour. My favourite, I love the buckbeak, the animatronic buckbeak is the best thing in that tour. He is so good. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah. It's hard to say, because obviously they're so imaginative and they're so amazing, aren't they? So it's just everything's got a really big input, and it just really drives the story of each film. So it's hard to say which is your favourite, really. So
it's very diplomatic, but we all know the right answer to that is dragons, just always.
Oh, yeah, dragons are amazing. So I'm not actually sure if dragons, we're all thinking a dragon was supposed to be in Fantastic Beasts, but I don't think that is the case unless they're lying to us. So we don't know. All I know is it was something called an Obscurus. So that's it. So
that sounds a bit like the Boswell nickname.
Yeah.
Like how Doctor Who does the anagrams for the companions for auditions, you know? Is that a thing that people know, or am I just bringing this up?
And also, I think Avengers, the first Avengers movie, their code name was Group Hug, which I thought was really cute.
Yes, saying that, there was a girl I was friendly with, and she was on the set of Age of Ultron, and she was telling me stories about that and how incredible that was, you know, with all the scenes exploding in the street and everything, all that.
Oh, man.
Mental. So, yeah.
My sister did awesome. Age of Ultron work, and her story was completely different.
Oh, yeah.
She was in the very end scene where they're in the rebuilt S.H.I.E.L.D. facility, and there's just people wandering around with clipboards, and that she was one of them. She was like, I did nothing. I didn't see anyone. I heard Chris Evans in the corridor next door, but that was it. But she went through the door. Oh my god, I would have been like breaking down doors if I heard Chris Evans in the next door corridor. Right. Yeah. But she heard about the Beast Fantastic Beast auditions, but I think for the girls they had to have quite severe haircuts. Like 20s haircuts, which I think if you've got long hair would be a bit of a shock. Do you see?
Yeah, talking of that, that's what they do with the women a lot, especially in a lot of the women had to wear wigs, you know, so there was a lot of time talking that with 300 women or whatever, you know.
Wow.
They were all having the hair really, really covered in all this God knows what to flatten it as much as possible, and then this wig was put on, and obviously it would be incredibly itchy and hot all day, so... They're wearing heels and kind of short dresses, things like that. So it wasn't massively ideal for them. So, a lot of the women were shivering because with what was going on in the scenes, you know, like making it sort of cool, cold and things like that, you know, dusky, you know, how they do in the films to make it look cold and things like that. And it was actually freezing. So, yeah.
Could you see your breath?
Yeah, you could. Yeah. Oh.
I guess we could talk about what you've got coming up next. So you've obviously got into acting, you're doing extra work. Have you had any other extra work coming up or since Fantastic Beasts or any just other acting work that you can point the direction of?
Yeah, well, I've just completed doing a period drama film and called Families at War, and that should be going on to Netflix eventually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And there's a few other films called Lead Me to the Dark, which is like a dark vampire film. About a young girl who is unfortunately dying, and she her mother's like obviously distressed and all this sort of thing, and she's dying and all this sort of thing. But it's kind of a weird storyline. But the vampires sort of make her a vampire, this child, so it's quite unusual. So there's that coming out. So that I'm not sure if Ray Winston was supposed to be making a cameo in that or not, but that would have been nice. But yeah, that should be hitting HMV eventually later in the year as well. So there's quite a few things up and down, but I've just been doing plays at the moment this year, so in Liverpool.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. So
I love the theatre, so
yeah,
I try to see as many plays. I'm actually going to see Wizard of Oz this weekend at our local theatre, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, theatre.
But no, I mean, in talking about with Harry Potter as well, because I did some extra work in Fury, you know, Brad Pitt's war film.
Yeah.
Same with Monuments Men, George Clooney and Matt Damon, and I met them all, you know, it was great, and I have photos and stuff like that. Wow. But no, with some extras and things like that, they were telling me stories, and a couple of them were actually people who were involved in the Room of the Requirement for a good month of filming.
What?
So, yeah, they were just telling me all these stories. They were in there for a month, and they were just doing all this and just they basically like slept in their like clothing, so
in the little hammocks.
Yeah,
you're right. I took a nap in the Room of Requirement. Yeah.
I mean, thinking about obviously that with the Room of Requirement, it's not massive amounts of it, but a month's filming in there just for what was in the film. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I guess all the Order of the Phoenix DA stuff. That would be pretty. Pretty cool to be involved in that.
Oh yeah.
Anything. So. I would take it. Whatever they threw at me. They're like, you're gonna do this. I'm like, fine, yes.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Well, now I obviously got it. I didn't get the opportunity to be in any of the Harry Potter films, but because I was only just getting into acting. It was during university, things like that. Later in the year when I was, you know, becoming an actor, learning things and stuff. And you know, it's taken obviously a few years and things to learn where to look and all that sort of thing. So it's just, it's all amazing now. So
yeah,
just trying my best. You know, it is hard, obviously, for any actor. So it's just just trying to get out there and find the work where I can, audition as much as possible, things like that. So, yeah.
I think it's amazing that, you know, parts of the Harry Potter universe are still continuing because you were able to be in part of it in Fantastic Beasts, and even in an interview early on, Eddie Redmayne had said he'd kind of given up hope on being in any of the Harry Potter films, and look at him, like, he's Newt Scamander. So I think that's it's great that there are these opportunities. And even if, hey, you could be in The Cursed Child. So if you so chose.
Harry Potter lives on.
Yeah.
One of the makeup artists was telling me she was doing Eddie Redmayne's makeup and stuff, and then they were going, should we put a toupee on you? So, you know, like, I don't know what his answer to that was, obviously. So.
Do you have any plans to see Cursed Child, the Harry Potter play on in London?
Yeah, I do. I've been speaking to it about friends, and it is something, you know, because obviously that was big news with who they've cast as Hermione and things like that, haven't they? So, yeah, I can't wait to see that. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to make a visit to London and see that. So,
I have tickets for February, so that's going to be bloody ages away.
My goodness.
We've got an interesting one up here at the moment. It's Green Day, but an international tour, but it's playing at in Liverpool as well, a big play about Green Day.
Oh, the
American Idiot.
Thank you.
So, that's starting soon, 21st to 24th or 5th or something, I think. So, yeah, I'm going to go see that. Can't wait to see that. I've grown up on Green Day, so that was awesome. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's cool. The music is really cool.
Yeah.
Like adaptations of the original stuff.
Mm.
It's cool to hear like a big, you know, ensemble singing awesome harmonies to these songs that you just rock out to.
Yeah. I did all sorts of things when I was growing up with Green Day, just like decorating my own guitar, same as Billy Joe's, you know, so, well, not the same, but similar, yeah. So, yeah. And like, you know, doing live performances, things like that. So I did that on a cruise ship on holiday once. It was like a talent, whatever. You know, and I got up on stage and did Billy Joe's song, you know, Basket Case. So that was cool. It's cool. It was fun. So, 17, I think. So it's, 17. So.
Wow.
Cool. On with the Newt Case.
Yeah.
All right. For this week's Newt Case, we have the Snallygaster. It is a particularly scary creature. You're welcome, Ariel.
Thanks.
it is mentioned most famously in Ghosts and Legends of Frederick County by Timothy L. Cannon and Nancy F. Whitmore in 1979, as well as Snallygaster, Lost Legend of Frederick County by Patrick Boyton in 2011. This creature is said to inhabit the hills surrounding Washington, D.C. and Frederick County, Maryland. The earliest accounts of sightings were by German settlers in the area, speaking of a Schnellergeist, or quick ghost. Mm. Most descriptions of this creature say it is half bird, half reptile, with a metallic beak lined with sharp teeth. It is most often described as having one eye in the middle of its forehead, and with a long tail reaching up to 20 feet, and occasionally can sprout tentacles from its mouth as well.
Nope.
There are a few that say the tentacle thing, a few accounts that don't. Yeah, definitely, like, go online right now and look up Snallygaster picture. It is sufficiently terrifying.
I'm okay.
What a monster that sounds.
It is the monster. I think it's the monstriest monster that we've had so far on the podcast in the Newt Case. But a few eggs were reported found in Maryland and West Virginia in 1909 that were large enough to hatch an elephant, to give you an idea of the size of this thing. the attacks reported were that it would suck the blood of its victims, which also led to a number of vampire theories at the time. They're like, oh, is there a vampire happening around here? It's like, no, it's something much, much, much
worse. Even worse.
There were so many sightings of this creature in early 1909 that the Smithsonian Institute became interested, offering a reward, according to some accounts, of $100,000 for its hide. President Theodore Roosevelt even almost postponed an African safari trip in order to personally hunt the beast.
He should have.
If anyone were to be successful, I would think our objectively most badass president.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is all happening in 1909. It just seems like something from the medieval ages. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there some sort of weird drug we don't know about that caused this hallucination? Because no. I refuse to believe this thing was so commonplace that people were like, even the president was like, I'm going to hunt it down.
Well, most of the accounts were in the same, like, a ton of them are 1909, but they range for about, like, 25 years or something, so it's very possible that there was something going on at that time. Everybody in Frederick County just got super high, had the same trip. I have an excerpt from Ghosts and Legends of Frederick County. The excerpt says, "The Snallygaster finally met his end in a way some might envy. The creature was flying near Frog Hollow in Washington County when it was attracted by the aroma of a 2,500-gallon vat of moonshine. As the beast flew overhead, it was overcome by the fumes and dropped into the boiling mash. A short time later, revenue agents George Dansforth and Charles Cushwa arrived on the scene. They had received information about the still, but were rather startled at the sight of the dead monster in the vat. The two agents exploded 500 pounds of dynamite under the still, destroying the remains of the Snallygaster and John Barleycorn's workshop."
They really wanted to make sure it was dead. Like, extra dead.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
You can fight it with magic or you can fight it with dynamite.
And moonshine.
And moonshine. according to everything that I've read, there's only one known natural enemy of the Snallygaster besides dynamite, apparently. that would be the Dwayo. The Dwayo is a bipedal Appalachian werewolf. Which also has a number of sightings and attacks at the time in 1909, especially. But I've been reading through Snallygaster, Lost Legend of Frederick County, which mentions the Dwayo, but I haven't found anything yet that is an actual report of the two fighting, even though that seems to be a motif on a lot of the information online. So I'm looking for more of that. So maybe next time for our next Newt case, I can have some cool anecdotes of the Dwayo and Snallygaster fighting, because those two monsters fighting sounds like a movie that I would definitely watch.
Yeah.
Not me.
That's good. No?
I wouldn't watch that movie. I'd watch the one. I'd watch the one where he's being exploded and that's it. Like, I don't even want to see him going into the moonshine, because I don't want to see the tentacled mouth and all of that mess. It's just too much for me. It was the drink that killed the Snallygaster. And then the dynamite.
Been there.
You've what? How?
That's like when I read it the first time, that little account and the explosion and the whole moonshine bit, I was like, oh man, I've had mornings like that.
Are you secretly a Snallygaster? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Well, not a secret anymore, thanks.
Oh, you're the one that made the Snallygaster the beast of the week, so I don't want to hear it. You were throwing out all these signs like, look, it's attracted by all this moonshine, and I don't know.
So far, the only thing that Snallygaster and I have in common is moonshine.
Have you ever actually had moonshine, though?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh. Man.
It's largely terrible, but there is some pretty delicious moonshine out there. It's pretty much just pre-whiskey, because whiskey is aged in smoked barrels, so that's what gives it the flavor and stuff. So it's like American vodka, but harder.
Yeah, living in Tennessee, I know a thing or two about moonshine. Not like having had any. But I've gone to a place where they make it, and it smells horrible. My parents have bought apple pie moonshine.
Yeah, I've had that stuff. It's fine.
It's fine. It's okay.
But if anybody wants to send us moonshine for educational purposes.
A little expert in that.
There you go.
So that's it for this episode. We don't have a podcast question for this episode because we had an interview in place of a main discussion. But as always, feel free to send us in your fantastic theories, comments, questions, fan arts, cookies, howlers for Shannon since she's been gone for eternity. And yeah, we mentioned cookies because we want cookies, apparently.
And moonshine.
No.
No. It's fine.
No.
We're all over 21. It's fine.
No, but moonshine apparently attracts Snallygaster, so I'm trying to stay away from that. And we really want to thank Mitchell for joining us.
Yes,
Mitchell,
thank you.
Let people know where we can all find you online so we can follow you and your journey through the acting world.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, just my Twitter name's at Mitch Thornton 24. Just my general name's Mitchell Thornton. So, yeah, I'm just on Twitter updating with my acting stuff all the time, really. Pictures and footage, all that sort of stuff. So, it'd be great to have you guys follow me and I can follow you back.
Yeah.
We look forward to hearing more. And obviously, when we see Fantastic Beasts trying to hunt you down and spot you.
Yeah.
But I'll be somewhere, I'm sure.
That'll be good. And you can obviously all contact us, Speak Beastie. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Speak Beastie, or over on Facebook at facebook.com/Speak Beastie, or Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And obviously we have Patreon where you can support us. With November getting closer, the hype for Fantastic Beasts is rising. We plan on bringing Speak BC to a convention near you, although probably not near me, unfortunately. So that sucks. anyway, your sponsorship can help everyone but the British host do that. We'd love to meet all of our listeners. But yeah, so get in touch, guys.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Claire.
Mitchell Thornton. All right, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, and case closed.
Awesome.